don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid. I mean, because people keep things, you know, we hang on to things because we're worried about being embarrassed or our image and things like that. You know, ask for help. My life experience has told me more often than not, if you ask somebody for help, they're going to tell you something. You're going to learn from it, either what not to do or what to do, but you're going to learn. And so to me, that's something that I see lots of people fail with, just not asking for help. Second thing I would say is, you know who you are. Be comfortable in who you are and believe in who you are. You have, as an entrepreneur, as a man, you have to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else is. So ask questions, believe in yourself, and don't be afraid to think bigger than you can think right now.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. Before we get started on this episode, I'd like to remind you all to check out our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, whose mission is saving the Black family by first saving the Black man. Check them out at CodeMMagazines2Ms.com.
Definitely check them out, and definitely keep your prayers for the president of Code M Magazine, my man Brad Bolin. As I stated earlier, he's dealing with some health challenges, but he's got the right attitude. You're going to see him shortly again on a Black Executive Perspective podcast. But today, we're joined by Chris Jackson, a seasoned entrepreneur, emerging tech strategist, and retired Deloitte consulting partner, for a powerful conversation on how unrepresented founders can transform hustle into legacy. Chris will unpack why structure, systems, and clear vision aren't just helpful, they're essential for sustainable growth. From building aligned teams and leading with data to leveraging AI and protecting your brand through strong processes, Chris will discuss a strategic roadmap for Black, brown women and veteran entrepreneurs ready to scale with purpose and power.
Before we get deep into it, let me give you a little bit of background on our man here. Chris Jackson is a U.S. Air Force veteran and retired Deloitte Managing Director who helped grow businesses from startups to billion-dollar operations. Today, he leads Brownstone Consulting, where he helps founders create structure, alignment, and vision to grow and scale their companies, especially those of underrepresented communities. Chris Jackson, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Good afternoon, fellas. Good to be with you.
Buddy, good to be. I'm glad you're here, right? And you're sitting there like you are. You're still in the Air Force, and you know all that attention and this and that. You know, I was in the Army, so I know that profile. But we're definitely happy you're here, my friend.
That's good. That's good. You know the Air Force, man. I mean, yeah.
Always with a life, right? let me ask you a question a little bit. Give me a little bit of background. Where are you currently located? I know with the Air Force, you've probably been all over the place, but where are you currently located? Give us a little bit about you from a human perspective, about your family.
Sure. I live in St. Louis, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis called Frontenac, Missouri. Okay. Midwest guy, born and bred, despite the travel, I'm still a homegrown, show me state kind of guy.
Okay. That's what's up. That's what's up.
And buddy, tell us a little bit about your family.
Got a beautiful daughter and a granddaughter who is 14 now. So we are not as close as we used to be. She texts me, talks to me, but it's not the same. We were tight. That was my dog. We would go kart, shoot. That was a girl. Now she's a teenager, young lady.
Rite of passage. That's a rite of passage.
That's been an adjustment.
Listen. Listen, my friend, I definitely get it. My daughters just turned 18 and 17. I can't even get them to pretty much do anything with me now, right? They're out doing their thing. So it can be, you know, I'm like, hey, let's play some softball. You want to play some catch with your daddy? Used to do it all the time. No. I'm going to hang with my friends.
Definitely miss it.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, buddy, number one, what we're going to talk about today is something that's so important, okay? And what you do. And you willing to invest the time to come on and share about helping other brothers and sisters, you know, build out and scale out their businesses and having the right mindset, but not just mindset and hustle, the right tools and processes in place to make sure that they can build a scalable, repeatable business that drives continuous revenue. And look, you're traveling all over the country. I know you and I have chatted over the last month or so. You're all over the place. You're building businesses. You're consulting with clients. You're working with clients. Tell us a little bit. Why did you want to come on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, talk about this topic?
Well, Tony, when you told me what you're doing, I think the thing for me is, yeah, I'm about helping anyone that looks like us. So if I can extend the knowledge, extend a topic, extend a subject where it's going to benefit somebody or be a blessing in some sort of way, I'm good with it all day long. And it's probably important just given the diversity of my background. So family were entrepreneurs, they were contracting construction. My mother did Mary Kay. She worked for the government. So I did her distribution, if you will, taking Mary Kay packages out. You know, started out early, in the military. Went from there to consulting. I had a great career in consulting. I started a number of companies, as you alluded to. So I've learned a lot of stuff, been a lot of places, and done a lot of things. And what you learn when you get old is that, you know, there's a lot of things that you love to see people not make the mistakes you've made, particularly when you look at kind of where we are right now relative to kind of, you know, the pace of change. It's not just AI. We're talking social dynamics, social change, in conjunction with AI, cyber, the pace of technology, technological change itself, and the global impacts. So it's a tremendous time with tremendous opportunity, but also with tremendous challenge. And I think oftentimes our folks are not focused on what it takes to be successful, particularly in raising a business and the economic opportunities that we're going to be having kind of moving forward. So that's why I'm here. That's why I'm happy to talk. Any topic is open for me. Happy to help you guys.
Buddy, I love it. You're already chomping at the bit, my brother. So we're glad you're here. So I'm just going to ask you this because I already know the answer. You ready to talk about it?
Let's do it, man.
All right, let's talk about it, my brother.
You know what? You talked about the plethora of experiences you've had across startups, corporate America, small business, things of that nature. In your experience, what do you find recently has been the biggest misconception about folks like us as it relates to scaling and operating a successful business? Because I think everybody understands the old adage of 90 some percent of all small businesses or startups don't make it and that kind of stuff. But we heard recently that the most successful people, it wasn't their first business, second business, third business. It was their fourth foray into business that actually struck lightning or whatever the case may be. But what do you see are the biggest misconceptions that we have coming in to the business realm?
Well, I think a couple things. I mean, so one, I'd argue that entrepreneurship goes deep in an individual. If you're a business person, you're doing something. I was selling newspapers as a kid. Mm-hmm. I was hustling. Any way I could make some money, mm-hmm. I was doing it. And that was just who I was as a person. So I think, one, you've got to think about that, where a lot of people just say, hey, this is the cool thing, or I can get rich as a social influencer, or I can do this. No matter which way you cut it, it's work. You got to grind. But the thing is, you know, when you think about it from our standpoint, I'm going to talk like I'm talking to our kids. Mm-hmm. Hustle alone is not going to get you there. It's not just the hustle and grind. I mean, you can work, but you got to work efficiently. You got to partner with the right people. You got to be self-aware. You got to get the right people in the right seats, because if you've got talent, but you don't align that talent to some focused goal in an effective way, you're not going to fail. Many entrepreneurs, as you alluded to, Chris, they kind of stumble. They've started several companies because they're learning along the way, mm-hmm. and they're learning through failure. And I would argue that it's better to fail fast, and certainly better to fail, but to fail fast and learn from it than to fear failure at all.
Wow, buddy. And you're 100% correct. Let's throw it like this way, because at the end of the day, let's just go back to what you were saying, and I can definitely relate. I was in Amway. I mean, I was, you know, kids don't do it today, but, you know, I was, you know, shoveling snow, going over to my neighbor's house when I was a little kid, you know, make $2-3 a shovel, you know, all those little things. So that either you have it or you don't. One of the challenges is that learning how to shovel snow, learning a paper route, lemonade stand, and then eventually maybe, you know, starting, an Uber, or you have your own landscaping business, or, you know, you're a hairstylist, right? A cosmetologist, whatever the case may be. The challenge is that you only know what you know. right? And then at 9 times out of 10, there's nobody saying, let me show you how to scale this landscaping business. Let me show you. You see my point here. So the question I have is, why do so many people hit the ceiling, right? And then when they hit the ceiling, they think it's them or it's their product or their customers don't want them anymore or somebody else came in and took over the market, blah, blah, blah. Talk a little bit about that, my brother.
Well, yeah, let's unpack a little bit of that because you hit a couple of different things. I mean, you know, for any business, and you talked about a lot of different types of business, an individual's really got to have a clearly articulated vision. You've got to know what you are trying to achieve. And a lot of times that vision gets confused. We think about, we want to be so many, this, and this, kind of the Jamaican multi-jobs kind of thing. You see a lot of that, but focus is critical. And you have to have a crystal clear vision. If not, you're going to disrupt, scatter the energy, and you're not going to be focused in the way you need to start getting value. So that's one. Now, the other thing that you touched on, I think it's important to bring out, you know, for folks who don't look like us, there is a pattern. There's a playbook. There are people who have been there and done that. Many cases, you know, through things like integration and things like that, that have taken us out of our communities, we've lost those tribal stories. We've lost that guidelines. We've lost the examples in our communities to pass those things on. So it means kids have to step outside themselves and asking questions. And this generation who's so mobile phone focused, they don't do that. They're less social. So they're asking less. So we've got to do a better job as the elders, making sure that we are proactively reaching out. Anytime we see a kid with promise, we need to be on them, making sure that they understand, because it's not about just the opportunity or rising to achieve a given goal. Oftentimes, you don't even know some of these things exist. For example, I love cars all my life. Just always love cars. Happen to be artistically talented. I can draw anything I look at. I never knew there was a such thing as an automotive design engineer. Never occurred to me. No one in our family circle knew about that. It was a path that I could have taken and probably had a great feel. Now, and certainly managed consulting is not something I ever heard about. So there's many things that kids don't know are even out there and available to do. But what's more important now for us to think about, the entire landscape is changing. So let me give you some context around that. So as I talked about all the moving pieces and everybody talks AI, well, we're talking a lot of the wrong things about AI. AI will create opportunity without question, and it will destroy things without question. That's not there. What's more important is where it happens. So the prevailing thought, and I've done a lot of research around this one in Deloitte and the surveys that I did there on tech strategy and the tech landscape in the mid-market. The prevailing argument is that the mid-market, middle class, is going to really be adversely impacted. But when you look at where AI and agentic technology is really taking hold, it's at the knowledge worker level. So we're talking people like accountants, like lawyers, like architects, high paying jobs. That's problematic because when you think about those jobs, those are the jobs that are really driving the economy as COVID shows us. They are the high salaries, they're buying the cars, making the factories going, they're consuming stuff.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
Where the middle class is kind of struggling and kind of going through as they have always done. But if we disrupt that segment, there's an economic impact that ripples down. And I don't hear anybody talk about that, but that's going to impact our folks without question. So it's important to say, these are the things that are out there. These are the challenges we face. But also, let's start looking at what the possibilities will be with that. And there's some foundational things that I want to cover through the talk about just running an effective business, which is kind of why I chose to do this EOS thing. After retirement. And let me give some context around that. So EOS is the Entrepreneurial Operating System. It's kind of a business system focused for leaderships to help your leaders get three basic things. Helps them crystallize a vision, helps them get traction in their organization, and helps them get their leadership team accountable, functional, and having fun. so that entrepreneur can begin to enjoy their life, or what we call the EOS life. So I wanted to do that specifically for our companies, because we do tend to have, as Chris said, higher failure rates. We do tend to have more challenges. And this is a proven system to help folks grow, scale, and break through the ceiling, Tony, as you were alluding to. That's why I'm doing that. And so the lens I'm talking about today, I'm looking through that lens, because this change that we're facing will create tremendous entrepreneurial opportunities. They're going to be very different than the ones that we grew up on, but there will be lots of opportunity. And regardless to the volume of opportunity, you still have to run an effective business. There's some foundational things that we talked about. Yeah, like our kids think, if I just hustle and I just work hard enough, I'm going to get there. You need a hustle. You need the vision. You need clarity. So to really get traction in an organization and move things forward. So let me stop there. I'm talking at you guys, but I'm kind of wound up. This is important to me. Kind of a hard.
No, buddy. No. You speak in our language. Go ahead, Chris.
So in the idea of exposure expands expectation, right? So you talked about you and drawing the cars and things of that nature. If you had been exposed to that, maybe your expectations would have been different. But when you talk to people like us, one of the things that I've been exposed to is that we are I'm either going to be the king of this, or I'm not going to be involved. And if you're not talking a million, billion, gazillion, because social media has tainted the expectations or the feasibility of what a solid business model is. There's a connotation in our community that if somebody says they own their own business, they then are byproduct a millionaire. It used to be when people say, I own stock. Oh, dang, that dude is rich. They don't have the qualification to understand there's levels to this. And so when you have these conversations and people come in chomping at the bit and excited, how do you temper those expectations to say this is going to give you repetitive and consistent returns on investment or things of that nature, but it's not going to make you, it's not a lottery ticket. It's not a tech, biotech stock that you put $10 into and 2 years later you was a millionaire. How do you have those conversations?
Now, hold on one second. I'm going to piggyback on that, right? Because I want you to answer this as well. You talked about how AI is going to take over, right? And it's going to hit, not just the middle class, but, I don't say uber wealth, but those attorneys. So when you answer Chris's question, I want you to also answer this question. How can you educate people about something that they have no interest in? Okay. From a community standpoint. Right? Because the data also shows that people of color are the least likely to engage with AI. They're not even thinking about it, right? Until, something changes. So speak to that as well.
Yeah, Tony. So a couple of things. You don't, as Chris alluded to, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So that makes it challenging. And, this social media driven culture has, I think, almost by design, pushed this pervasive everything right now, get it in an instant.
The bag.
I'm rich.
The bag.
It's fundamentally wrong.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of money for the people that push it,
yeah.
But it is not realistic. Building is building is building. And so it takes time, regardless of the concept, regardless of what you do. And make no mistake, these kids, they see this, the social media influencers. They're grinding. They're putting in work, creating content, building content. Tony, you've got a podcast. That's a lot of work on the back end. Mm-hmm. So the thing that people have to realize, it's going to be work. The question is not so much what work, it's what work will be available with this wave that's going to be created and net new. So thinking about that, what work aligns with your gifts and your talents, your strengths that you naturally have, because the closer you can align with your gifts and talents, the less hard you'll work because you're leaning into who you are. And when you're into who you are, there's a passion, there's a love, and it's not work at that point. So there's things there to really think about. But as you talked about, Tony, to really kind of look at it a little bit broader, we've got to get down to some fundamental basic business things. And no matter what the opportunity, like I said, all these things have to run and operate as a business. So there's basic things we need to be making sure that we are fluent in. Basic financial literacy is critical. People talk about that, but I don't think people understand how important it is, because just how you spend or how you live below means or above means is directly correlated with your ability to invest in yourself or acquire things to create a business opportunity or capitalize on one. Very basic stuff. And this is, we're talking at home, family together, talking over the table stuff that doesn't happen anymore because everybody's moving at this crazy pace. We have got to slow it down. And I put something on LinkedIn a while back about, you know, slow. To go fast, you really have to go slow to go fast effectively. And I think that that's true. Just because the world is moving at the pace it is, it doesn't mean that we've got to move. Doesn't mean you're going to miss some things. Some things you will miss, but you're not going to miss what's for you. But it is important to step back and take a look at what's going to be created, where some of these opportunities are going to lie. And they're going to be very different than the ones of this last century or the last couple waves. When you think of this as through industrial revolution type of terms, if you will.
Right.
So,
right.
So AI is just the basic. Let's talk ChatGPT. When we talk about that, we're just aggregating data. I'm doing something to aggregate and filter through a data source. Initially, broad internet data, which is flawed data, which is why the results were what they were. Now I've got structured language models that'll pull through curated data. So I get results. You had somebody on one of the podcasts, example I saw, that talked a little bit about that. She was doing a black GPT, but it was
Aaron Reddick,
inherently biased for the consumers that it was going. So right. Data is relative. These systems are not as complex as people think that they are at this stage. Now, that's not meaning that they're not going to get there and they're getting there quickly. Because what we're really talking about is not just artificial intelligence. We're talking about augmentation of any given technology with human capacity to increase productivity. That's really right. What we're talking about. And that's where you're seeing the first waves. How do I get more productive in this goal rush of, you know, how do we get things going? And that can be applied to how do I grow a business? But it doesn't take away from the basic fundamentals. In a basic business, you've got to have your vision. You got to get the right people in the right seats and make sure that they have the right culture and fit. Because if you got the culture and fit, you got the heart and mind, the organization, they're going to die for you. They're going to work for you. They're going to believe what you believe. And there'll be a passion and an energy that grows, very much like an early Google who's just set out to do no wrong. Core premise of their, one of their core values. So getting those things there, learning how to solve issues, how to document basic processes so things are repeatable, just very basic things, understanding how to use data. Data is critical. Information is pervasive around us. We Google things, but we don't really use it. And AI is great to help you aggregate and look at data in a unique way to allow you different insights. So people tend to get protective around knowledge. And you're seeing this now. Corporations, professional services firms, they're trying to monetize AI. Well, the knowledge is a commodity. The more you give knowledge away, the more you learn and take it back.
Correct.
And people don't tend to understand that. The businesses certainly don't, but just people don't. We don't share enough with each other. So there's lots of things like that that I would say you certainly should be thinking about relative to AI, but focusing on, if you're trying to be an entrepreneur, focusing on the very basics of business, how to make money, how to manage that money, how to grow, how to motivate people, very basic things are critical. And they don't happen fast. You got to put in work to do them. But if you put that work in, there's a tremendous amount of payback. And one last thing I'd say, it's probably worth some thought. There's a book I read a long time ago called The Millionaire Next Door. And it's a book I think a lot of kids should maybe revisit and take a look at, just because, you know, the basic premise of it, a couple of marketing guys studying first generation millionaires, meaning that they became millionaires in their lifetime, wasn't passed to them. And the thing that was very interesting to me is, all those millionaires, the first generation millionaires, made the same mistake. They didn't teach their kids how to do what they did. Mm. They sent their kids to med school to become attorneys, engineers, etc. They didn't teach them those simple dry cleaning jobs, you know, corner store jobs. That made them millionaires living below their means. They taught their kids to be consumers. There's a deep lesson in that we should think about.
Let me ask you this, because you talked about AI and then you talked about slow and steady winning the race. And that's antithetical in many conversations, because AI is supposed to increase time to market and speed things up and get us to the answer that much faster. How do you reconcile passion, as you spoke about, and ingenuity versus being a slave to the gospel of whatever the computer spits out?
Yeah. So I would say I would challenge that prevailing thought that, you know, AI is quicker, faster, better. What AI does and what it's learning to do that's a little more concerning is the volume of information that it can process and the speed in which it does so. Mm-hmm. So it's not doing things that we don't do. It's doing them faster, taking in more aggregate things and processing them and understanding the patterns and similarities within them. But I don't know that I would say that it's antithetical, that it's moving so fast that we can't slow down. regardless of the pace of the change around you, you've got to anchor on what it is you're trying to achieve. So what are you trying to do with AI? What do you want to do? If not, you're just caught with all the shiny objects that are presented as everything's flying by you. You've got to say, this is what I'm trying to do, and how will AI apply to what I am trying to do in this particular thing? You know, there's a lot of very simple things that, you know, it's displacing, but there are a lot of uses that we've really not thought about the use cases for because everybody's focused on gold rush and monetization. Mm-hmm. I'm saying learn. Just learn and play. We underestimate and ignore the value of play and imagination. Mm-hmm. We were all kids, you know, you grew up in that generation, mm-hmm. go outside and play. Mm-hmm. And you just went outside and you figured something to do and you were playing and had fun.
Right.
There is a lot that comes from that exercise. You know, creative imagination, the ideas of things that don't exist right now, they come from creative play and imagination. Doing just things to get out and be in the environment around us. Mm-hmm. We are so tied into this system that it blinds us from truly being who we are. And that's the one advantage we have over AI right now. Mm-hmm. But that'll come in time because it's learning the way we learn. And we don't actually learn. We don't know how the human brain works effectively. Mm-hmm. We don't know how AI is working effectively. Now, the people that discuss this, they're not going to talk about that broadly because they're just trying to kind of keep the ring fences and make money off this thing. But it will be a change and there will be sentiency at some point, but that's irrelevant to where we are. The key is, how are we coexisting? How will we leverage it? Because AI will be as good as we are. And to the extent that it'll be really bad, it's going to mirror how we are really bad as people.
Correct. Listen, my friend, you talked a lot about basics and stuff. Let's break it down, right? Because one of the things, you know, Chris spoke about, you spoke about, you know, the lack of knowledge, the mistakes you make in terms of when you start your own business, even though you start making money, right? Because I think that's the first thing. I want to make money. But then there's a ton of other things that go with it, all right, to be able to scale the business to keep making money and then maybe eventually, you know, handing it down to your kids or whatever case may be, where that generational wealth comes from. So let's back up for a second. Let's do this. The question I have, I just started a business. I'm making, I got a couple of dry cleaner stores, right? I'm doing well. I'm making a living. I got, you know, my customers coming in, this and that. The question I have is, when would I know that I need, and I have a vision. I want to own a bunch of dry cleaning stores across the city, okay? When do I know when to, like, what's the process of me saying, you know what? I don't know if I can do this by myself. I may need to bring somebody in that can educate me in terms of how to scale this out to make it successful. And then number two, what would those first steps? I call a Chris Jackson. Chris comes in. So talk a little bit about the process of educating that founder, that person, in terms of how growing their business and then implementing the things that you do from an EOS standpoint.
Okay, sure. And it's interesting. I'll hit that perspective and I'll try and focus it kind of on mid-tier, early stage and mid-tier businesses because that's what we see. But ironically, the patterns and behaviors are the same in private equity held startups and early stage companies, period. So you touched on it right there, kind of having the vision that I want multiple dry cleaners. So that's a vision and somebody say it. Well, you have to create the vision and then share that vision by those folks around you. So oftentimes the entrepreneur is driven by this thing in their head. And he or she is just passionate about it. No one around them can see that. So you've got to not only have the vision, know how to effectively articulate it in a way that folks can understand, because you're going to need that for capital. You're going to need it to motivate your employees.
Okay. I was just going to say, so when you say communicate to everybody, your employees, everyone, right? So they can share the vision.
Exactly. Go ahead. So you've got to have the vision. Okay. So then it takes you to mention employees. Second most thing. So a lot of entrepreneurs, I want to do it all because I want to keep the money. Understanding what your number is and what you want to make, that's key. But understanding when you make that number, you've also got to think about, what am I creating for others? Because you have to have others to build this vision and execute upon that vision. So people become critically important. And oftentimes we just look at, you know, it's a challenging talent market, so we're just happy to get talent in. I would argue that when you've got a compelling vision, you begin to start looking at a couple internal things, your core values. What are your values as an entrepreneur? what's important to you. What do you believe? What would you stand for and what would you die for? That's important. So you have to first know that, because you can't find other people that hold that value if you don't know it yourself. So you create the vision, but also kind of know thyself. So then I'm looking at people through the vision of my business, my core values. And now I'm making choices, not just on talent and capability. I'm making choices on who they are as people. Do they believe what I believe? Will they fight for what I want to fight for? Is this purposeful for them? And I've got to make sure that they are the right people. So getting the right people in with the right set of values and then putting them in the right seat. Many times you'll have people who are remarkably talented and they're let go of our organizations or they're not heard because they're in the wrong seat. Mm-hmm. They're not in a seat that plays to their gifts or talents. Mm-hmm. So it's important to get the right person in the right seat. So once you get those things, you've got a couple of legs of the stool. In EOS, we've got six models we talk about, six components of this model. The next one we focus on is data, because data brings another benefit to entrepreneurs. When we start to look at data, it takes us away from the gut feel aspect of entrepreneurism, or the I think it's going to be here, or somebody did this so that works. No, I'm looking at real data, who this customer is, what somebody is willing to pay in the marketplace. How long does it take me to actually do this repetitively? Can I be profitable in that? So data teaches us a discipline that's critical. Once you've got the vision, got the people and the data, you begin to say, okay, let me now look at issues, because I'm going to be facing issues in any business. But the key is learning very early on how to solve and manage issues at the root cause. Getting it to where you fully understand the type of changes that are facing you. But more importantly, when you start to bring people on, you add that complexity. Organizations get organizationally more complex by every person you add on. Large orders of magnitudes. So every person you bring on, you've got to be able to communicate with them effectively to solve problems and teach and create a culture of problem solving. The earlier you do that in an organization, the more effective that organization will be. And you take that, then you start looking at processes. And people look at processes and kind of back away. I know I did from what we did in the big four firms. When we talk processes in the EOS space or the entrepreneurial space, we're talking about 20% of the process that gives you 80% of the value. So things that are simple. And simple processes are important for a couple reasons. One, they drive consistency in an organization, which helps an organization build and scale. Also, it makes things simple for people to come on board. Okay, I understand this hire to fire process in HR. I work it here, so I know how my job relates to that simple process. So if the processes are simple, you're basically breaking down how the organization works in simple ways so people can understand it. And the more people in the organization that collectively understands, the more effective they will all be and the better they will work in unison and the better they'll actually help each other. So we've looked at, you know, the vision. We looked at, you know, our people, right people, right seats. We look at the data. We start understanding how to solve issues. We look at the process. And when we do all those collective things together, that lets the organization begin to get traction. So I get traction because everybody's moving in the same way. Everybody's talking the same language. Everybody's believing the same thing. They understand the vision. They know what their role is and their part is. Now the organization's getting traction. Now I'm breaking through that ceiling. I'm growing. I'm scaling. And I've got a foundation, just like with a home, that I've built and established so that will grow and scale and support the weight of the growth that I'm going to have in that business.
And then I can have my dry cleaners all across the city, though, right? So that's basically what you're saying, right? Well, in terms of me scaling it up.
You gotta look. But so we go through this. A lot more exercises than just the dry cleaners. It's like, yeah.
No. But I'm just using what you're saying in terms of setting up a foundation, right?
Yeah.
That now you can have repeatable revenue, repeatable systems that you can scale up.
Right. Well, and that's the key thing. But, you know, again, there's a lot of work up front that people rush to in terms of not just the values piece of it. I talked a little bit about that. I think that's critical for hiring and growing, but also the core area of focus, kind of where your focus. Most entrepreneurs are like this. I'm going to just go get revenue wherever I can get it, get the money coming in. There is a power, if you look at the people that have been most successful, of focus, zeroing in, focusing on a space and crushing that space. Because you can make money lots of ways. I can make money doing a whole bunch of stuff and not have great margins. Or I can make money on one thing that's in the right space with the right margins, and I am crushing it, living a good life very quickly because I'm focused on the right area for me or my business.
You talked about fellowship. You talked about human consulting beyond just the systems and spitting out data in that regard. How important is it for a young entrepreneur or a new entrepreneur to embrace the concept of candor? Because you talked about passion. And in my experience, I've had friends and family who got so dogmatic on what they believed that they didn't see the tea leaves, or you couldn't tell them this wasn't the way, no matter what you presented. It's called the backfire effect in psychology, right? Like when people confronted with the truth, they retreat to a defensive mechanism as opposed to embracing the reality of what's in front of them. How do you address those things when you run into inevitably those type of entrepreneurs or founders?
Yeah, that's almost a whole show on that topic alone. So, you know, is a couple of things. You know, radical candor, I forget who does it, but it's a book about radical candor, okay, is critical. But let me step back before I even address that. If you are starting a business and an entrepreneur, you are selling. You're going to be a salesperson. No matter what type of business it is, you're going to have to learn how to sell. Selling is a very humble profession. For people who understand selling, very humble, because you get rejection on a consistent basis. It's very challenging. So I would argue, you know, everybody's arrogant, has an opinion, and in this internet thing has just really pushed that out so it's pervasive. Everybody believes their way is a way, facts don't matter. But the reality is, in the business world, in the entrepreneurial world, they do. There's a customer, you got to please that customer, you got to have a product that's worth somebody taking. And so humility is probably the thing I'd say people should focus on more versus this candor or bravado. You have to have confidence, just, and you'll get confidence. Building a business builds confidence because you are beat down. You fail, you get back up, you do it again, boom, you get back up, you do it again. But what does that do? Every discipline you do that, sports, medicine, you know, athletic events, bodybuilding, all those things require you to get down, punish yourself, do some hard work to get a result. No different with business. So the things that are probably more important than having things like broad candor and confidence in those areas, because that's going to develop along the way, is actually having humility. Because if you're humble, you can listen. If you listen,
right,
you can learn. If you're learning, you're growing. And so that's key. Also, ethics, being fair. People don't believe, you know, everybody wants to climb the ladder. It's a long way down when you fall down that ladder. And if you screw a lot of people on the way up, you're going to pass them and deal with them on the way back down and maybe not be able to make it back up and recover if you've not done things right. So having empathy, having compassion, understanding for folks, I would argue those are some of the most critical business skills. Mm-hmm. Now, I know the models they hold up, the jobs and all these cutthroat folks that do things. In terms of growing something that's generational or that's going to provide you joy or for your family or whatever reason you choose to be in a business, you'll get to a point where you realize money doesn't really matter. It's not about the money. It's about how that business maybe brought you close to your kids or how that business allowed you to change the lives of your employees or people that the product touched. And you quickly learn. And I tell this to young kids all the time that you learn that once you know how to make money, money doesn't matter in the same way, because money doesn't make you happy. It's those soft and tangible things that ultimately make us happy. And as an entrepreneur, if you can focus on those things and ground yourself there, I would argue your foundation is much stronger than your competitors in most cases when you're focused on those core things.
Let me ask you this, buddy. You know, because what you were saying, you know, as you were going through the different attributes that a company needs to be able to scale. And you said a lot. There's a lot of things. You're talking humility, you're talking vision. But in my experience, I've seen people struggle in these two areas that I want to dive into.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
Number one is people. Mm-hmm. It's hiring the right people, right? And putting them in the right seats, because a lot of times people, you know, this person's talented, so they can do anything, okay? And then the other part is the data part, okay? It, you know, when you hear data, especially for small, mid-sized businesses, young entrepreneurs, founders, it scares them, right? Because at the end of the day, what am I measuring? So, I mean, some things, I had 10 customers come in, I had 10 go out, I'm good, right? But there's a lot of nuances to that, right? And so talk a little bit about, you know, number one, when it comes to hiring people, and then the other thing is, when do I may have I may have a talented individual, but I don't have a seat for them, right? And so talk about how sometimes you might have to let people go, right? Because your organization, as much as you want them, is not a fit for them, is not helping them grow. So if you can talk about the hiring part, and then also how people can start, if they're not big time in using data, how they can start slowly getting familiarized to start seeing the effects of how data can help their business.
Of course. There's many simple ways that you can address data. I mean, what gets measured gets managed. And so let's take the basic process. You're a dry cleaning company. Yeah, I know that I'm trying to increase my dry cleaning sales and volumes. So if I know I want to do that, I got to reach the people. So I'm starting to think about, okay, how many ads do I may place out? Because the measures and the data are just based, think of them as metrics. We encourage folks to have a dashboard in the business, a very simple one that has the core metrics that are critical to the things that they know give them a pulse of the business. So it may be in a dry cleaning, it may be sales, it may be days turnaround for product, you know, drop off of cleaning, for example, right, or whatever the metrics. But understanding what measurements are critical to the business gives you a discipline to say, hey, these are some metrics that are important. So let me start to track those. And those, if you start to track them, they're going to give me data. If I'm measuring how long stuff's turned in, I may know that I need to put my promotions on Mondays, because I get more stuff coming in on Tuesdays than I do Wednesdays and Thursdays, and I can shift my staff. So that's a data point that seems insignificant, but if I start to measure it, it gives me value. So measuring things and understanding how data can help us is different. It's not complex. We tend to get worried by numbers and afraid of numbers. This right. is just saying, hey, these are the key things I'm gonna do in this process or this business, and I wanna track them. How many calls will I make if I'm a salesperson? I wanna make 5 calls a day. If I make 5 calls a day, 5 days a week, there's a number that I'll get to over a couple of weeks that says, oh, 5 calls a day, 5 days a week equals 3 sales. So you can start to pull those out. So that data becomes important in that regard. And give me the other part of your question, Tony. I'm sorry.
Just hiring the right people, buddy. Yeah. Making sure that you got the right people in the right seats. Dive into that a little bit more. And then sometimes you may have to let people go.
Yeah. So letting people go, start with there. I think we've got to look at that differently. People tend to look at, you know, people being let go as a bad thing. I look at that as oftentimes it frees you to get aligned to something that you may love and get aligned closer to purpose. So keeping somebody in a role that's not the best fit for them doesn't just hurt the business, it hurts them. So we got to kind of break that mentality. Now, the importance of this, I would argue the people piece is highly critical to any business. But that's why I talked a little bit about core values and understanding what yours are, so you can actually hire to your core values. We should actually hire people to the core values and measure them against how well they hit the organization's values. It makes it very clear from a performance standpoint, but also it gets the right people, because you could have a person that is remarkably talented, doing everything right in the job, but if they don't have the culture fit in the organization, they're going to slowly undermine that organization. And I always beg my clients to just please get rid of that situation, because it will hurt you in the long run.
So, Chris, let me, because I want to stop here for a second, because in my experience, and I know you're focused on small, mid-sized, mid-market businesses, but in my, and even in those businesses, to be fair, one of the things that I've seen, where people will have values. They would say, we stand for this. We do this. We don't accept that. And they don't live up to them at all. Okay. And so if the leadership is not living up to the values And then now you're hiring people, and then you want them on the onboarding session to understand all the values. And then the next day you look at your manager or the leaders of the organization, and they're not. Matter of fact, they're moving ahead because they're not diving into the values. So you see my point here. So sometimes if I worked for corporate, if I worked for a company and I saw that they said their values was this and they didn't live up to it at all, then I go start my own business. Okay. And then I'm hearing Chris Jackson come in and say, look, man, you got to make sure that we get your values. What do you stand for? Where my experience has shown me that really doesn't matter as much. Do you understand where I'm coming from, my friend?
Very much so. I'll give you a good example. I just did with a client, and, it was a really good session. We went deep in this particular area, construction company. I'm not going to say the name, but a minority construction company, growing. They're about 30, 40 million right now. The goal is to be 250 million. That's kind of where they're aspiring to be. And we were talking with the leadership team about core values. And the guy, the owner, he's a believer. So he very much wants to differentiate and lean into that. And there's a dance, as you know, Tony, being in corporate, just, you know, that you've got to do around how you hire and fire around those type of topics. But we talked about that. We talked about the risk, but we talked more importantly about if this is who you are and this is what you want to build, this is what you need to build. And his leadership team is on board with that. There was a lot of debate, a lot of challenge with how we talk about it. But he wants to lead being faith-based. It's a differentiator. And we talked a lot about it. One of the things we talked about, I think, brings us to this example. The parallel I use was Chick-fil-A. So at Chick-fil-A, everybody says, how do they get these good kids? Well, because they stand for something. They believe something, and the people that come believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm. Right. But they live what they believe. Mm-hmm. They live what they believe.
Exactly. And so that's why that's a great example of what a core value is and how it manifests itself. Mm-hmm. But from a business standpoint, look at what they do. They were a quick serve restaurant open 6 days a week, not seven. They are making money. People are standing in line just to get an operator's license to run one of them. Mm-hmm. I have never seen it where the drive-thru is not full.
Right.
But they're doing it based on their core values and drawing in people and kids that hold those same values. So the model is proven, and they're not the only one. They're just one that's an easy one that everybody touches. Mm-hmm. So that people piece of that and your core values and core focus piece. Like I said, they're very focused. They do chicken. Mm-hmm. And they do chicken. You know, nuggets.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, chicken.
Right. So focusing on that market, having the right core values, having the right people in place, think about how successful they become. Anyone can do that. Most people don't choose to focus on it. And this company, I'm excited about them because they're going to lean into this. And it's going to be a challenge for them in some places. But I believe it's going to get them business in a different way, because construction can be kind of tough and it can be kind of cutthroat. And I suspect there are people out there that want ethics, honesty, and people they can really trust. So I think there's a niche for the market these guys are playing into.
Awesome, buddy. I love it. So look, talk about process, man, because at the end of the day, and not just process from an internal standpoint, but process in terms of, you know, building your brand, right? Chat a little bit, because those things are just as important, right? And, you know, you just use Chick-fil-A, right? Their brand says this, okay? But they incorporated a process for that brand to be able to be seen that way or spoken that way. So talk about how process is very important.
And let me add to that before you answer. Let me add to that, because you just gave a great example of the construction company that you're working with that I believe will be successful. But they have to, not only in their process, as a master black belt in Six Sigma, you have to also be able to articulate the fact that at 35 million, your processes are thus and they're appropriate for 35 million. At 150 million, there has to be a change or a shift or a small pivot, not on the core things, but some things that we came with can no longer abide by in where we are. And then at 250 million, your goal state, not that we don't look like ourselves anymore, but we have to be amenable to the process evolving. And how hard is that to explain to people that, hey, what got you here is not necessarily going to keep you here because of external factors more than internal factors.
Well, process evolution, it's actually easier than most would think. And I'll talk, let me hit Tony's first. I'll come back to that. The differentiator with process, and I like to think of process, you know, through the lens of your brand, your brand promise. I mean, if you've got a solid process, we talked about like a Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. they're known, they're fast, they're friendly, and the food is good. Mm-hmm. And that's about process. They're consistent. They're on those drive-thrus. They're consistent. If you watch them in the kitchen, they've got a process down. They're effective. They're efficient and they're timely. So that process enables and fuels a lot of their brand. And I think that that's important. If you think of process as a brand promise to ensure things are delivered consistently, no matter who delivers it. And it also helps you protect your brand as you start to scale. Processes give us stability. So when you talk about, you're going to get big, but I would make an argument, Chris, that if I've got my core basic processes down and they're followed by all in the organization, as I start to evolve them and iterate them, they're going to grow. We add a few more steps on this, grows, it becomes more complex. But I've built a culture in that company that actually understands simplicity of process. So I don't make things overly complex. I understand things that are simple in process, but also shared by all. So I share them so everyone around them knows am I working differently, which makes the change piece easier. So it helps that kind of grow and scale as well. So there's a lot of things that go into that will stifle things or is not avoid you stifling things as you scale.
And look, but how hard is that for people to embrace? Because one of the things is the change agent is changes is naturally adverse to people in their psychology, their mentality, and their emotionally.
So, it's the reason it becomes easier in a lot of the smaller companies is mm-hmm. because you can control things. You've got a span. Mm-hmm. EOS focuses on the leadership teams mm-hmm. because leadership teams are, in my mind, are very much like a family. They set the culture and tone for that organization. And if you've got good leaders, just like good parents, they don't have overly complex rules. They set simple, consistent expectations. They are there for you to rely on and they will communicate with you. So those are good attributes for most leaders. But what we see in most large corporations, that's inconsistent. That's not the case. And it's very hard to manage it with the level of complexity in many of those large organizations. But to the extent that you can build these foundations early, you build for great companies. You end up with the Chick-fil-A's. Mm-hmm. The Home Depots, the companies that have strong process and have grown and scaled and become great. And if you, when you talked to Tony earlier about hitting the ceiling, the nice thing about it is organizations will continue to hit the ceiling. But when you've got these disciplines, you focus on your crystallized vision, people, data, process, you know how to solve your issues. It lets you break through every time you kind of get there because you just mm-hmm. use the same things, kind of focus on these 90-day sprints or cadence to kind of work through it. Like a model we have within EOS, we typically get the folks through 90-day cycles. So they kind of live this 90-day world. So every 90 days, they're grinding ahead, focused on their priorities or rocks or whatever their goals are for that quarter. And then they come up at the end of the 90 days, look back, take a look at some of their metrics and say, hey, are we on track for our vision? Because sometimes they're not. You get back on track the next 90 days. Same thing, same measures, tracking your priorities and rocks. You get to the next 90 days. And so you look at the world in 90-day sprints when you've gone through this program. So that lets you digest it, but it also lets you adapt for change quickly. Mm-hmm. If something changes in 90 days, 90 days is a good run, but it's enough time I can change that business and make my last quarter to hit my financial goal. So it's a good time that we kind of build in there as well. And I don't talk a lot about that, but that's one of the key things that helps with this system as well.
Hey, buddy, final question I have for you here, right? And obviously you've been educating us today, which has been great. And I'm pretty sure the audience is loving everything that you're getting out of this. And, one of your goals is to educate and help, brothers and sisters, build their businesses, right? So if there's a piece of advice that you could give an unrepresentative founder trying to scale, right? They're trying to scale. Without losing their mind, what would it be, my man?
Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid. I mean, because people keep things, we hang on to things because we're worried about being embarrassed or our image and things like that. Ask for help. My life experience has told me more often than not, if you ask somebody for help, they're going to tell you something. You're going to learn from it, either what not to do or what to do, but you're going to learn. And so to me, that's something that I see lots of people fail with, just not asking for help. Second thing I would say is, you know who you are. Be comfortable in who you are and believe in who you are. You have, as an entrepreneur, as a man, you have to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else is. So ask questions, believe in yourself, and don't be afraid to think bigger than you can think right now. The world is much bigger. Anything is possible. And I'm a believer that you have to visualize that success to have it. And if you can see it, you can picture it, you can imagine it working in your head, you can achieve it. It will become real for you.
That's very sound advice for any leader. One of the things that I learned in one of my programs, if you can conceive it and believe it, you can achieve it. And I think that you're a walking testament to that from your journey, you know, throughout your life. But my question for you is, how can a Black Executive Perspective podcast help you going forward? Do you have any websites or books or anything that you would like for us to lean in on or broadcast here? Or what ways in which that we could assist in your mission?
Well, actually, I'm working on a book with a young man right now who's pushing me. It's a very different book than I thought, but it's, I think it may be needed. It's you know, almost like a book from a dad, not the book I was wanting to write kind of thing. Maybe more to come on that. I think it ties to a lot of what our kids need, I think, are not hearing at these times. So it's kind of a heart book for me. That's why he keeps pushing me to go that direction while I'm trying to do this business thing, to stay busy in retirement. So that would be one thing. I'd love if we just touched on kind of the AI issue, Tony. I think that that's an area where I think we as a people need to understand that opportunity, but we also need to understand the opportunity that we are in a global marketplace, and AI will exacerbate that. And there's going to be a lot of money made. And we're not investing, we're not thinking, we're not asking the questions the way we need to be asking, and we're probably more complacent, and we're not pushing some things that we used to push. And I'll touch on this real quick, just the trades. So this construction company I'm working with, we pulled in a guy that's gonna kind of help coach the owner. He's a CEO of a larger firm, he just retired, and he and I have been kind of talking, he's a real good guy. And he told me that the average age of a trades worker, plumbing, engineering, electrical, you know, whatever, it's about 58 years old. And so we've taken trades out of the schools. These are jobs that are six-figure jobs. They're not going to be outsourced. They may be augmented with some technology to be more productive or more efficient, but they're not going away. And these are the all automotive and factory jobs that were once for our family. And we're not talking about that at all. As a matter of fact, we're pushing kids off at a time when get your degree, when I would argue, and I had some friends who are academics that may not like this, I would argue that colleges as we know them are completely irrelevant because the pace of change is faster than they can create the knowledge to get people enabled to do it. So that model is going to drastically change as well. I don't think it's politically tenable to talk about it, but every kid I've been talking to as of late, certainly the last few months, I've been talking to them about trade opportunities and things like that. And I was raised, hey, go to get your paper, get your degree, get this. Mm-hmm. This is not that right now. We're at a different time. And these things may mean different things as we go. I might be out there. I don't want to get excoriated online for anything like this, but that's what I'm saying.
That's fascinating.
Tell me what I'm saying.
That's fascinating. I would love to have an extensive conversation about that, bring you back for that particular, maybe in a panel or something, Tony, you can put that together, because I would love to unpack that. I have a daughter that just graduated from college, and one of our conversations delved around, don't overestimate, it used to be a bachelor's, now it's a master's, now it's a doctorate or two doctorates that really get you paid. Like, it's the goalpost moves, especially for us, the goalpost continues to move. So that would be a great conversation to be had.
Oh, yeah, love that.
Absolutely, the brother.
Yeah, no, and I'm pro education. I want to make that clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
This neighbor is heard in the sound bite.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the style of education, right? Right, is different.
Well, what's going to be productive for you? Where you get your return on value?
Absolutely.
But here's the thing, though, buddy. This is just the first of many where you're going to come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast to educate. You're a teacher at heart. You know, the things that you talked about today was definitely well needed, my man. We kind of touched the surface on them, but we want to have you come back so we can dive deeper. I think the other thing, though, too, is probably have a founder or an entrepreneur on, and, you know, we can ask questions and stuff of that nature. But definitely would love for you to come back for the AI portion, because that's something we definitely want to dive in deeper and educate more people, because all and for the reasons that you've stated earlier, right? But right now, we want to thank you for appearing on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, dropping the knowledge, and then the passion, buddy, and the conviction. I can see why you've been so successful throughout your career. And obviously, your clients are very happy to have you. And anything that we can do here at BEP, we got you back, but we definitely going to have you back on.
Sounds good. Thanks, honey. Happy to help, man.
Thank you, my friend. So now I think it's time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And the tidbit today, for many underrepresented founders, the grind is second nature, but the blueprint is missing. We're taught to outwork, not outstructure. Legacy isn't born from chaos. It's built through clarity. Systems turn hustle into momentum. Data turns guesses into growth. And when you treat your numbers like partners, you stop reacting and start leading. That's how vision becomes legacy. And you heard a lot of that from our brother, Chris Jackson, CEO of Brownstone Consulting.
Excellent, excellent time. So at this point, we want to invite you and implore you to check out our other platform, our other things on the platform. Number one, Need to Know with Nasinga, where Dr. Nasinga Burton weekly provides insights, knowledge, and a host of game that she brings to the table from a plethora of experiences she's had. Make sure you tune in each week where Dr. Burton will dive into timely and crucial topics that shape our world and our community. You don't want to miss it.
Absolutely. And you don't want to miss the next. Our roundtable comes together for Pull Up, Speak Up, where these bold, unfiltered voices tackle the most provocative issues that's happening on a daily basis. These are sharp perspectives, real talk, a call to action. People are throwing down. It's not an episode. It's a revolution. So make sure you check out the next Pull Up, Speak Up here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't remind you to incorporate our call to action, which is LESS, less. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking everyone to embrace less. The L is for learn. Learn to educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances and things that you may feel uncomfortable with at this time, but we need to have in our bag in order to move forward and to evolve, like Brother Chris Jackson said.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E for empathy. Now, since you've learned about people that you didn't know and their culture and their nuances, now you can be more empathetic to what they go through, because now you can put yourself in their shoes.
The first S stands for share. Share your insights and enlighten others. Don't hide it. Divide it. Make sure that you cascade your wisdom for the next generation and make sure that we do this thing for our communities to grow.
Absolutely. And the final S is stop. We want to, you want to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Auntie Jenny or Uncle Joe says something that's inappropriate at the Sunday dinner table, you say, Auntie Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, LESS, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world, and we all will see the change that we want to see, because less will become more.
This was a very powerful episode. We implore you to tune in to our other episodes on the platform. Make sure that you check us out. We'll have great things coming in the future, but you want to make sure you go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, review us, give us insights and opportunities to meet you where you are, and tell us what you'd like to hear about. Subscribe wherever you're listening. Where can they find us, Tony?
My friend, you can find a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on our social handles of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guest, the CEO of Brownstone Consulting, Chris Jackson. For my co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We're going to keep striving about it, and we're going to thrive about it. We love you, and guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.